The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
We live in a weird freaking world, man. It's hard to understand the motivations of how certain stories get in front of you, and it's hard to understand how some are completely ignored. We are kind of in that world where, because people are, I guess it's political correctness, although that feels such a sort of stereotypical, outdated term at this point, but a lot of it is that people don't want to hurt people's feelings. You want to believe these things. And a lot of times you find out the truth is a lot more complicated and sometimes completely wrong. One of these stories I would bring to your attention on that front is the Rolling Stone story from a couple of years ago now, where a woman who was not, I mean, there was a woman, female author and a female person in the story who was apparently raped. That was the what we were supposed to believe, at least, was raped in a terrible incident, which they described in gruesome detail throughout the story. And there are some questions to be asked about it. One of the guys who actually asked the questions about it really kind of broke the story and brought it into the mainstream. And then eventually, obviously, the story was proven to be false. Is Robbie Suave from Reason Magazine and Reason.com. And interestingly enough, the story went all the way, if you remember, from being questioned, disproved, retracted, and then a giant lawsuit happened. I actually just heard an interview with the guy who created Rolling Stone, still owns the company, and he named it as the biggest mistake they made in the entire time the magazine had been in existence. Oops. Joining us now is Robbie Suave from Reason.com. Robbie, thanks for coming on the program.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So there's a couple reasons we have you on today. Because number one is there's a case that we don't know the end of it yet, but the beginning of it looks awfully similar to kind of what we saw with Rolling Stone. You were one of the people kind of looking at this and asking really uncomfortable questions yet again. I don't know how you got this lot in life. but can you walk us through this latest story with Cosmopolitan?
Sure. So I saw this story, yeah, like you said, in Cosmo. It's about a woman who works at an abortion provider in North Carolina, and she says she was on a date with someone. She knew who it was, and obviously she knew his name. And when he found out that she worked at an abortion clinic, he got very uncomfortable. The date ended, and then she claimed that he actually followed her to her car, pushed her into the car, tied her up with the seatbelt, and raped her. And that she didn't go to the police right away. I think she eventually went to the police, but she didn't tell them who did it, which is astonishing because she actually knows his name. And actually he continued to harass her, she claims, in this reported piece for Cosmo. He continued to harass her for months after, sending her voicemail messages and texts. She thinks the kind of protesters outside her clinic might be in league with him, or he told them what to say because they're saying targeted things that she remembered from the date, which sounds kind of, I mean, that's a kind of a tough thing to believe, but I mean, she would know who it is. So you'd think there would be ways to verify it. But what bothers me is there's nothing in the story that suggests that the reporter said, hey, what's this guy's name? So I can look him up on Facebook at the very least to, you know that he really exists. Your friend said they saw you, that you were injured right after. Did she talk to the friends? Those kinds of things. It's not clear they were done. And those are the exact things that as you alluded to earlier, the author of the Rolling Stone story failed to do. So I've just been trying to, you know, just get answers to, you know, what did the editing and approving and verifying process look like? And Cosmo has not answered any of those questions.
Wow, I mean, that is really strange if you're gonna make a big deal about one of these stories that obviously they believe in and or at least they say they do, and they were making a big deal out of it and trying to, again, paint a broader storyline. This is never about one crime, right? It's about how basically men are constantly...
It's a rape culture.
Yeah, it's a rape culture. And in this case, I think specifically targeting people who oppose abortion as, you know, violent and angry and out for these apparently revenge attacks. And I guess you could make a case, that I'm sure this obviously has happened in, you know, over the years, where a woman is involved in a terrible incident like this legitimately, and then down the road says, you know, look, I don't want to go through the terrible, you know, process of reliving it, and doesn't report it. I think that's a terrible idea, but, you know, I can understand how it's possible. As you outline here, she was a subject of ongoing harassment over a long period of time, mm-hmm. and if she goes to the police and doesn't give their name, I mean, this does not seem like a plausible story. And obviously, that's the best outcome here, because then there wasn't an attack. I hope that's the way this turns out. But, I mean, when you're talking about basic journalism questions, what's your recourse here? There's no way to force them to comment on it, but is it just trying to draw attention to the story?
Right. I mean, that's what I've been trying to do. I mean, I began by emailing the author, and I try to be polite about it. I don't presume that she's lying or that she did a bad job. I just said, you know, it looks some of the proof that I think would be necessary here is missing from the story, but maybe you did that anyway, and it just didn't survive into the final version. Mm-hmm. You know, did you learn the guy's name? I think that's, you know, so important. Even if you didn't contact him, right? Did you Google his name to see that this person exists? Did you talk to the friends or her parents, or did you listen to any of the harassing voicemail messages he apparently left her? Those kinds of questions. So she didn't answer those when I contacted her. I then contacted Cosmo to ask if that was done, and then I started, you know, tweeting at them slightly more aggressively. I still think politely, just to kind of get their attention. And they've said nothing. And you're right. There's nothing. I guess I can't make them. I think it's important to note that the author of this story is a freelancer for Cosmo who appears to be an anti-abortion activist, mm-hmm. Which would make me, you know, if I was going to edit or run a story by someone who is very clearly an ideologue for this cause, I'd want to be extra careful that their narrative is at least being vetted, because they are going to be prone, just like the author of the Rolling Stone story, to believe this anyway because it fits what they think. And so you have to be additionally careful. And, you know, I don't know. Like you said, I don't know if you know, maybe women who work at abortion clinics, they are at higher risk of violence. That could be true. I don't know. I don't think really the story establishes it very well, but it cites this as a central anecdote to prove that case. And this looks kind of sketchy at the very least, and certainly not proven or demonstrated.
It's interesting because I think in some ways the Rolling Stone approach is slightly more defensible, in that, like, you wouldn't want to, you could argue, we shouldn't contact this person who is charged with these crimes because we don't want to alert this woman, to alert the guy that the story's going on, and then he might wind up harassing the woman again. But when she's coming out publicly and allowing her picture to be in the story and her name to be printed, whoever this guy is, if this actually happened, is obviously going to know that she's talking to the media, and she opens herself up to that anyway. So there's really not that much downside to going and talking to this guy. And it doesn't seem like they did that, unless it's just a really terribly written story.
Right, exactly. And we have to remember the cardinal mistake that Sabrina Rubin Erdley, the author of the Rolling Stone story, made was relying on Jackie, the source, allowing Jackie to claim, well, this is what my friend said, and my friends don't want to talk to you, but this is what I recall them saying. And Erdley didn't follow up with the friends to verify that. And here, you know, there's sentiments sort of attributed to friends, and it's not clear if the author contacted them. So it's almost the same thing. And yeah, I agree with, I mean, this woman, you know, unlike Jackie, the woman in this Cosmo story, she is named, her picture's there. So she's not, you know, which adds a certain amount of additional credibility rather than just being quoted anonymously. But that said, I don't understand not at least investigating whether this person exists, particularly because he's in a pattern of ongoing abuse of her.
Yeah, and Robbie,
I mean,
I mean, he hasn't been, there's been no arrest, right? There's been no charge.
Right.
I mean, there doesn't... Without that, it's kind of weird to assume there is a crime, but nobody, I mean, even when she knows the guy's name, knows who did it, there's been no law enforcement action here. That's
right.
Pretty suspect.
It's pretty suspect too, because I don't know how you would for him, for the perpetrator, I don't know how he would have expected to get away with this.
Right.
I mean,
right.
In reality, sexual assault on campus is unlike the false Jackie story. It's not a premeditated, you're lured to an upstairs room, you're attacked by several people. It's, I mean, the reality is, and Candace Jackson got in trouble, the education department official, for saying this last week, but it's true that alcohol abuse is the background for the kind of most of what we understand to be sexual assault. It's intoxicated victims and perpetrators, hazy recollections. I'm not making excuses for that. That's wrong, and those people should still be held accountable.
Yeah.
But that's how these incidents unfold, because then you can't remember, and you have to try to piece it together, and that allows actual perpetrators to get away with it. The sort of planned, premeditated, fully conscious victim who you then harass for months after.
Bizarre.
I mean, how would you expect to get away with that?
It's bizarre. And we're also supposed to, I guess, be led down the road of this guy raped her, at least in part, because she works at Planned Parenthood, right? So he hates abortion, but he condones rape. That's kind of a weird Christian zealot there, but I guess there's no accounting for these nut cases.
That is a weird set of beliefs.
Robbie,
I'm glad you brought up Candace Jackson, though, because this is a story I don't think it has had a lot of attention. Were these comments really controversial? I think it's controversial to say, but most people believe that in these cases where really bad things happened, I mean, it's no surprise that alcohol is involved a lot of the times.
That's right. And, she said, well, it's 90%. And she used an exact figure, which, of course, that's not a scientific statistic. So probably that was an exaggeration. But if we're being a little charitable to her, the sentiment is correct that I've read and reviewed probably 100 different Title IX campus sexual assault disputes, and the vast majority involve one or both being intoxicated. And Candace Jackson also said that these are being filed months after, and that's also true. In many of these that I read, and I honestly have read the transcripts of a great deal of these accusations. Often they are filed months or even a year later after there's been some additional falling out of the people involved. I don't mean to suggest that women are lying or that these aren't serious or that people shouldn't be held accountable, but they are much, much messier, much more confusing for people to kind of sort out who was right, who was wrong. Was there consent? If you were both drinking, if you were both unable to give consent, did you actually sexually assault each other? Or are we just holding men accountable because we kind of have that norm, which I don't understand why feminists are suddenly in favor of when it comes to these kinds of issues. So they're difficult issues. And broadly, what Candace Jackson said about it, I think is correct. And I hope that as the Education Department, as the Office for Civil Rights moves forward, they're kind of more serious about whether campuses should handle these things according to a standard that violates due process, or whether the police should handle these things.
We're talking to Robbie Suave from Reason. I'm sure you put some thought into this, and I'm a little perplexed by it. What is the motivation for people who are claiming this rape culture to advocate for colleges to be the arbitrator of these cases rather than the legal system? Isn't the legal system, I mean, I definitely think that's the appropriate place for it, but what is the motivation to not want the police to be involved in these cases?
Well, the kind of being most charitable to them, they're right that it is hard to bring these cases to trial through the existing criminal justice system. A lot of them stall out. A lot of times there just isn't good evidence. It's hard to prove even if you're right. Because people have, bad memories for things that happen during alcohol abuse, and if there's no obvious sign of the trauma, if they didn't go to the hospital right away and kind of have a rape kit performance, that creates actual evidence, but you don't always do that. So the criminal justice system probably does need reform to be able to handle these accusations better, but I don't know why they don't concentrate their efforts there. The less charitable explanation is that, there's a certain amount of I think, unnecessary attention being paid to the college problem when we know from statistics that women who are not in college are actually at greater risk of being sexually assaulted, which is surprising until you think about it, because women not in college are disproportionately less wealthy and less privileged, and they're less white, and they're, you know, people trapped in abusive relationships or in low-income communities. Those are the people at risk of violent attack, and they only have the regular criminal justice system to go through. But for some reason, we're paying attention to vastly more privileged people who are victims or claim to be victims, who are less likely to suffer violence, and we say they need this this quasi legal system where their accusations don't have to be proven in a court of law. I mean, it's sort of weird, anyway.
It really is. It's one of the strangest things, because you'd think if your concern is the victims. Yeah, and there are those problems with the legal system. You work on reforming that. We've reformed other parts of the legal system with some success over the fairly recent history. You'd think that there would be attention there, and instead, it almost feels as if it's really just a political case. There, it's really not about the victims. It's just about these organizations trying to prove there's this massive problem. When you really look at it, it doesn't seem like a systemic problem like that actually exists.
Right. It's a problem, but and maybe it's even a systemic problem, but it's a different one than the one they're talking about. It's a problem of it's a binge drinking culture. They party too hard. It's a culture of abuse dependency, things of that nature. It's a culture maybe of touching people or being too forward with people. I mean, there's a lot of, I would say, sexually inappropriate touching it. That's really what the 1 in 5 statistic reflects, is that people get groped at parties, but that's part of the statistic. When people
have
say
sex
1 in 5
they're drunk,
women are going to be horribly horribly sexually assaulted. They're actually, people in that survey said, well, I was made fun of at a party. Like, that person is reflected in that statistic.
Jeez.
Which I'm not saying is good. I'm not saying we can't talk about ways to solve that. I'm just saying that's different than saying 1 in 5 women are going to be held down and forcibly raped at gunpoint or at fist point or something.
Amazing stuff. And it's just the stories that the media actually does not seem to want to look at all. And I'm glad you're drawing attention to them. And keep us updated. If you hear from Cosmopolitan, I'd love to know if there's any way we can draw attention to this, because it definitely seems shady. Like, the story does not seem right. I hope we're right on this. I hope that there is no attack, because that's always the best outcome here. But I don't know how you get your answers. I mean, you feel like Rolling Stone, who is not exactly a super high level journalistic organization, it has a little bit more journalistic credibility to actually answer your questions. I don't know that Cosmo is normally used to this sort of inquiry, but I'm very interested to see how it plays out.
I appreciate you calling attention to this. I'll keep you updated.
All right, Robbie Suave from Reason.com. Thanks for coming on the program. That's
Thank
a weird
you.
One, man.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
These things keep happening, and it's like, and I guess this is probably every media organization at some level feels this. Like, I'm sure there are times where right wing organizations they want to blame some left winger, and it's easier to put that in there without the same standard of proof. The same thing with left-wing, Rachel Maddow, it's a lot easier to blame Donald Trump for something than their own party. And I think this happens here, was when you have invested in this narrative of rape culture that every guy wants to rape all the time, you find these stories and you're just willing to be like, even if it's not true, it's true. In that interview with the Rolling Stone guy, he said that the story was inaccurate, but the narrative was true. Essentially, like, guys really are raping all the time, but we just happened to pick one that wasn't true. That was essentially his point.
Pathetic.
It's incredible.